What would you say is the toughest marketing lesson that you had to learn during your time as a law firm owner?
You have to measure what you're doing. If you're just spending money and you're not measuring and you don't know what your ROI is, you're just throwing money away.
He's made really big strides as far as how he runs his firm over the last 5 years that have allowed him to become a much more profitable firm.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Answering Legal's Everything Except the Law podcast. I am your host, Nick Werker. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the podcast where we share expert advice on all the parts of running a law firm that attorneys weren't exactly trained for back in law school. Now, today we're going to be hosting a rather unique marketing conversation featuring the perspectives of both a currently practicing lawyer and a legal marketing professional. Joining me today is Jonathan Breeden, the owner of the Breeden Law Office. And also joining me today is somebody who I've worked with before, is Jim Christie, president of the marketing agency Postali. Thank you both for being here. Before we dive into our marketing discussion and hear some of your tips, your insights, can you both briefly introduce yourselves and to our audience? And I'll start with you, Jim.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Like you said, I'm the president of Postali. We are a digital marketing agency for attorneys. We've been around for better part of 15 years, I guess, at this point. Kind of just do everything related to digital, web, SEO, ads, branding work, things like that. And it's actually fun to have Jonathan here. We've worked with Jonathan for, you're probably going to know the years better. I feel like they blend, but it's been 7 or 8 is what I would guess.
I believe it was that long? The beginning of 2016.
Okay.
So 7.5.
Yep. Yeah.
I give you credit, Jonathan. Most of the attorneys I talk to have a much higher turnover rate with their marketing companies than that. So good on you for sticking with a good one. Can you introduce yourself, a little bit about what you do, so on and so forth?
My name is Jonathan Breeden. I'm a divorce attorney in the suburbs of Raleigh, North Carolina. I have offices in Raleigh and Smithfield and Anger and Garner. These are all Raleigh being the capital of North Carolina and the other three offices in the suburbs around Raleigh. I've been here in Johnston County in the suburbs of Raleigh since I opened my firm in October of 2000. I currently have three associate attorneys that help me. I have some support staff in El Salvador. I have some support staff here. So we have kind of an interesting mix in this firm. We primarily do divorces, child custody, adoptions, guardianships, anything that deals with family law. We do some simple wills, powers of attorney, stuff like that. We've been growing really fast. I mean, we've grown with the help of Postali. We probably have quintupled, if that's even really still a word, since we got with Postali 7 years ago. We doubled and then we doubled again in 36 months. We've been very, very, very fortunate. A lot of that's through the marketing. A lot of that's through a lot of hard work on our end too. So it's a little bit of both.
Quintupled is definitely a word, and it's definitely a good word to be using if you're talking about growth in your law firm. So on that subject, what are some of the marketing strategies that have really brought the best results for your practice?
I mean, Jim's done a lot of them, but I mean, I think the key thing is to be able to be found. You know, when somebody, you know, the most searched thing that reaches my website now is my name. And, you know, I have a decent name out here. I've been in this same community now for 23 years. And, you know, we do a lot of advertising. We sponsor the sports teams. I'm on the board of the Little League. I'm involved in the community. I care about this community. And so people have my name. They get my name from people. And you'd be stunned the number of times that I get a case of a new attorney and I go searching their name and I can't find anything about them. I can't find their website, their phone number, anything. So I think the biggest thing is to be able to be found if somebody is given your name. That is crucial. I do believe that most of, you know, we get the most of our first time calls from the Google My Business listings. And we have the four offices there, and those are optimized by Postali. You can add videos and blogs and stuff like that. And we work real hard to get 5-star reviews. In family law, that is extremely difficult because it is a very personal area of law, and you have to use your name when you're giving one of these reviews. So they're hard to get, but we do work very hard to try to get those 5-star reviews. And then we answer the 5-star reviews. I think Google really likes to see the fact that you're interacting with your clients. I always thank people for them because I truly am thankful to get it. And I know how hard it is to get and how hard we work to get them. And so the least I can do is tell people, thank you. So, if you're not doing anything, I would say, and you don't really have a website, the Google My Business stuff is largely free and you can do a lot of it yourself. And that's where I would start. If I was doing nothing else, I would start with optimizing Google My Business, and they may have changed the name of it. I call it Google My Business. Jim could probably give you the more correct name, but that's where I would start if I wasn't doing anything else.
I'm actually still annoyed that they changed the name from Google My Business. Unnecessary. So I want to follow up and ask you, Jim, like on the technical side, what has stood out to you as some of the most interesting legal marketing trends that you've implemented for firms like Jonathan's?
I don't know. This is probably like not the sexiest answer because I think a lot of people are asking for new and different things, but we have always found that consistency of doing the things that create broad visibility matters. So be aware of the trends, but don't chase them would probably be my biggest recommendation and place to go. I mean, we add new things to old tricks, so to speak, and it continues to keep us ahead of the curve. But just like Jonathan's saying, like visibility in his area of practice and a lot of other direct-to-consumer areas of practice, visibility matters more than anything else. So to think about how are people going to find you? They're going to find you by querying a question. They might find you through a branded search like he's talking about. You have to be everywhere you can possibly afford to be. And you have to diversify your spend in a way that makes sense. So those are like, when we see what really works, it's a lot of things work and some things work better for a period of time and then they ebb and flow. So be diversified. And when you commit to something, measure it. And then if it's going well, spend more. You know, we did this with LSAs, LSAs were a new thing. Jonathan had heard Google Local Service ads. Sorry. I'll explain everything just to make sure that we're all on the same page. But, Jonathan had heard from some colleagues that they were just not very effective. And we were like, we're kind of seeing the opposite, but let's try it and test. It was a new thing at the time. And are all the calls great? No. But when we look at a diversified strategy, they're definitely producing results. And those are things that like you have to be willing to try and experiment. I think some of the problem with some of the newest trends as far as like when it comes to AI, I know that was one of the things we wanted to talk about. A lot of that stuff just isn't mature enough to really test in an effective way. And most of it's behind the scenes. Like it's helpful for agencies to maybe be more efficient, or it might be helpful for Jonathan to learn what are keywords that are being used in calls that close versus ones that don't using AI. But as far as like broad scale marketing tactics that use AI, I don't think there's anything out there right now that should be heavily invested in. I think a lot of it is just very immature, and people want to sell it because it might make them money, but I don't think anything that's new and, all the rage is really super effective right now, really across any practice area.
So on that topic, Jonathan, I'm curious, does your firm use AI either internally or to assist with marketing activities currently?
Not really. I did use AI a little bit to help me with some podcast topics. I'm getting ready to start a podcast. It's going to be called Best of Johnston County. And I wanted to get some topics and some titles that I could possibly use. So I used it for that. I did use it to rewrite a recruiting ad that I had on Wise Hire a couple of weeks ago. And I thought it did a nice job taking what I had and making it a little bit better. But other than that, I've not really used it in my practice too much yet. And then, of course, I took those podcast ideas and topics, and it gave me the – I asked for the Ten Commandments of family law, you know, and it gave me – 10 commandments after I gave it a few more, you know, it's all about the prompt writing, you know, and then I use that to share, you know, with Jim and the people who write the blogs for me at, with his company. And they're going to use some of those as the topics for the blogs we're going to write for our website. So you can, you know, that kind of stuff I've used it for. You know, I've heard the horror stories of people using it for legal research and it's citing cases that didn't exist and stuff like that. And so, but, you know, I've got friends that are using it to do all kinds of things. So, I mean, I think it is, it's fascinating. It's cutting edge. I do wonder, you know, attorneys have to be very careful about attorney-client privilege. And, you know, I don't know, once it starts working, I don't understand what you own and what you don't own and whether the rest of the world can see it or not. I'm going to have a better understanding of that before I do much more than this sort of tangential stuff I'm doing. But I do know some people that are really using it to do an awful lot of things. But these are people that are already kind of cutting edge in computers anyway. So they're figuring a lot more out. I'm not the big computer person.
I have tried, and I sort of agree with you, right? Especially a couple of months ago, it was like the hot topic. Everybody wants to talk about AI. Oh, I'm using AI. Oh, I do this. But you got to be careful. You can't put this in it. So I got kind of had FOMO, like fear of missing out. And I'm like, I got to get on ChatGPT and I got to get it to start doing some of my work for me. And what that led to was I had to ask ChatGPT to send me to other versions of like generative AI that could be useful for me. So one of the things I wanted to use it for was like designing wireframes for landing pages on my site for like custom experiences that I'm trying to set up for new upcoming features, all the stuff that I'm trying to market, right, that might be coming out. But there's nothing that really fully does what I want it to do yet. It's still so immature. Like I want to tell it, hey, I want to set up a page that's the introductory page to, it's a landing page at the start of X buyer journey. It's top of funnel. It's this, it's that. And nothing is set up for me to do that yet, right? Like it can give me basic answers about what I'm looking for, but I just feel like I could be Googling that stuff and then finding a list and doing this the search the same way that I'm used to doing it. So I'm curious, Jim, what's been your advice for law firms when it comes to like using AI for marketing specifically?
Our advice has kind of been, you don't need to do a whole lot with it. Like what Jonathan's doing right now is a great example of like how it can be helpful. Like if some of our clients write their own content, they want to know what to write about. Instead of subscribing to a tool like Ahrefs or SEMrush or another SEO tool, tools like ChatGPT or other things can be really great for generating topics, generating outlines, generating like the building blocks of things are great. Also, people like Nick, you're saying, people that are not designers, Canva has a built-in AI component now. I mean, I think that's where, like, what we're seeing now is that everything that has previously existed is going to have an AI widget built into it. And don't be afraid to leverage it. But as far as like constructing whole things using AI, most people, lawyers or otherwise, just aren't equipped to build those things because they're not engineers or developers by nature. They're like, you know, it's still the same logic that applies. So we haven't been advising more than like, understand what's out there, understand what's going on, understand how this may impact your firm. But as far as what they can do, it's small steps, you know, content generation, maybe social posting. Like, you know, Jonathan and I were talking about social media earlier. Like, can AI help his new social media person develop topics and write some copy that might be catchier than what she can come up with on her own? Probably. That would be a good use for it. But to say like, you know, build me this thing that I'm going to really hang my hat on, like that just takes more engineering than I think anybody has the time to invest in or would or be worthy of investment.
So, Jonathan, I want to ask you, because I still think this is one of those things that we're early to the game on. And I know your firm is pretty active with sharing new videos. So Can you tell me a little bit more about the types of videos that your firm produces and like your, I don't want to say strategy, like your thought process behind it, like what you're looking to achieve, how you go about it, and what you do with them once they're made?
Yeah, I just, the videos, most of the videos that I shoot now, I shoot with James Publishing, and I have their marketing and amplifier program. And so I shoot a couple of videos every month with them, and then they go back and they edit it and they put it on Vimeo, and then I give it to Postali and Jim, and they will transcribe it and put it onto my YouTube page and stuff like that. We have not really started pushing it out. I don't have any real social media presence right now. I am just now hiring a social media coordinator. But the videos have been mainly answering questions. I usually just sit down and I try to answer one or two questions that I had gotten that week from a client and tell the answer to the question in a 90-second to two and a half minute talk, so that if people are out there and they're searching YouTube or they're searching whatever, and they have this question about how do I modify my child support in North Carolina, you know, maybe they'll come across the video and they'll be able to answer their questions. So somewhat educational. We do place some of the videos on the website, on the individual pages, where if people happen to be reading the page, they could get a video answer maybe of what's being explained on the page. It does, video allows you to connect with your clients, your potential clients, in a completely different way than anything else. Because it really, and particularly, I believe it should be me in the videos. And I like to shoot videos, and I like to talk, and I love to do podcasts with you, like with somebody like you, Nick. And I'm going to start my own podcast, which is going to be more of a community podcast, not one talking about the law. I find that's a way for people to hear my voice and my thoughts, and helps make me maybe more of an expert. There's a lot of noise in this community, right? There are probably there could be 2,000 divorce lawyers in Raleigh. I mean, it's a big place. It's got, you know, over 1.5 million people in the area, you know, so you got to have a good way to stand out. And I think answering people's questions, and if it helps them decide they want to work with me or give my office a call, that's great. If it just answers their question, that's great too. Or it tells them where to get an answer. You know, part of what I do and lawyers do is provide a community service. And if we can make a living at it, great. But, you know, I like being able to provide information to people. And now with the new social media person, we may start reusing some of those videos and actually starting to push them out when we've never really done that before.
I love your approach. And so I have a lot of like internal meetings here. And one of the things that always gets asked from like, really the C-level people is, Nick, like, why do you insist on hosting the podcast? Shouldn't we hire somebody else to do it? Couldn't we outsource it? Couldn't we hire somebody who just does podcasts? And my response is always that, like, I work here every day. I'm inside of this organization. I know what's going on, so I can communicate it effectively. And also having somebody who's a direct representative of your organization, especially somebody like you're the owner of your law firm. You personify your law firm when you get on and talk directly to your audience on video and audio. It's something we've never been able to do before. I mean, I guess in like the last 10 years, right? But I do like your strategy seems to me like you just want to connect with like your local community. You're sponsoring little league teams on the board, trying to talk about your community. And I think you'd be doing a disservice to yourself if you weren't like showing your face and speaking directly to them. So I want to ask Jim, because Jim, you probably know the technicalities behind this, but what would you say are some of the biggest benefits from video marketing and like, what's the proper way to do it if you could, what do you see out there that's just not good? Don't do that.
Yeah, that's a big, big question. So, like, video marketing can serve a lot of different purposes. I agree with everything you guys are talking about as far as just the connection piece. Somebody has to find it. How are they going to find it? So you either have to invest in getting eyeballs to the video directly, whether that's promoting it on YouTube, or you have invested in SEO and that gets people to your website, or you just try to rank those videos individually through like a YouTube search or a Vimeo search. So step one is, like, when you're going to create video, make sure that people are going to see it, because I think that's an often overlooked piece of why people think video fails, is that they create the video and then no one watches it. And it's like, well, you made it, but you didn't really think about how people are going to get to it. So think about that. You know, like, Jonathan already had traffic coming to his site, so it makes total sense. Now, the video on his website is a conversion optimization tool. It helps people who are on the site convert to clients, versus video that might be used to promote on social media, that's maybe more brand focused and less Q&A focused, is more top of funnel. It's more to just introduce what the firm is all about, who they are. So there are just, video is one mechanism of content delivery. And I think when we think about it that way versus thinking about it as video, it becomes much more effective. If we think about what message do we want to send to our audience, and we figure out what that message is, and then we say, okay, what's the mechanism for delivery? Is it written content? Is it video? Is it a podcast? Is it, you know, what is that? And the only difference with video is, yeah, you have to be more personable. You have to think through your tone. You have to think through your brand voice a little bit differently than you would through a piece of written content, right? So, you know, Jonathan's a really likable guy. People want to come in and sit down and talk with him, and that helps a lot. There are some of our clients that would be like, maybe don't do that. Maybe you connecting with somebody on through video is going to be harder than someone who's naturally more willing to just be friendlier and more individually connecting. So I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. I think the biggest thing is, like, if you're going to do it, just make sure that people are going to see it. Whether that's through an existing source or you're going to spend money to get people to watch it.
We will be right back after this short ad.
I felt like I always had to answer my calls, except the problem was, you at times had to go to my voice message, which could potentially translate into losing clients. I've been utilizing Answering Legal for my firm since 2015, and truth be told, it was a game changer for me. I can be anywhere, and I'm getting my phones answered by Answering Legal. A strategic partner, as I call Answering Legal, provides a great reward. What is that reward? It's simple. It's time. Time with my family, time at the gym, time for whatever I want to do. I have a lot of Spanish-speaking clients, and it's such a joy to have them have the ability to call my firm and somebody on the other line is speaking their native language. They will not call me unless there's a new client, just to make sure that it's possible that that client can speak to me personally. As a private practitioner, I would highly recommend Answering Legal to other private practitioners. Now, every call goes answered.
I have so much respect for you, Jonathan, but I also have a lot of respect for lawyers who sort of do the things that you're doing. To me, it's funny, like, you're name dropping companies that I know and respect and would trust and would recommend, like James Publishing, I think does a great job. I've worked with them before, and I know Jim does a great job. I've worked with Postali before, right? And you sort of understand that, like, you are, for all intents and purposes, a lawyer. You serve your community. That's the service that you provide. You're not a marketer, a social media marketer, a video content creator, but that doesn't mean that you can't participate where you need to. So I feel that you invest your time very wisely when it comes to that. So having said that, I'm going to take a gamble here and assume that you didn't know that your whole career. So, like, before you got to Postali or James Publishing or to this place that you are, what would you say is the toughest marketing lesson that you had to learn during your time as a law firm owner?
The toughest lesson is you have to measure what you're doing. If you're just spending money and you're not measuring and you don't know what your ROI is, you're just throwing money away. And I threw away hundreds of thousands of dollars possibly on marketing that was not working and I did not know. So, I mean, you know, you just don't, you know, I just got done interviewing a new attorney here from my office. We're growing. We need more help. And I was like, you know, if you come to work here, ask all the questions, but know there's a reason why we do everything. We didn't just accidentally get here. You know what I'm saying? So, but I did spend a lot of money on stuff that wasn't working because I didn't know what a tracking number was. I'd never heard of call rail. You know, I wasn't looking at the numbers. You know, I now know that I do 8, 9, 10 to 1 on local service ads. Last month I did 8 to 1 on local service ads, where I was thinking maybe they weren't going to work because one person, you know, 2 or 3 people in other cities around the country were saying it wasn't working for them. Well, it's working for me. And I know that because I've got tracking numbers on it and I can put the client's name and the client value to the phone number, through a CRM. But, you know, I mean, we've got a lot of things a lot of people don't have. A lot of people don't have CRMs. A lot of people, you know, but you can get a tracking number and you can sign up for CallRail and that's very inexpensive. And you can find out, you know, whether the advertising you're doing is working or not. It's, you know, it's media message market match, right? I don't know if this exact word, but like, you've got to know who are you going to talk to? What do you want to say? Where are they and how are you going to get it to them? Where are your clients? What is your client avatar? My client avatar is a husband or a wife between the ages of 35 and 50. The husband makes anywhere from 90 to 110. The wife makes 50 to 80. They've been married somewhere between 8 and 15 years. They have 2 kids. They live in the suburbs of Raleigh. They work in Raleigh. They drive out to the suburbs. And their marriage is falling apart for varying reasons. That's my client avatar. Where are they at? Where would they be? They're at Little League games, right? Where my kid plays in the Little League and I'm on the Little League board. You know, it's like, there's so many different ways to market and do things. And it doesn't have to be direct response. And I think that's the mistake a lot of people make, is that they're trying to do direct response. They're so desperate for money and leads and all this stuff. And that's not always the way to get the best leads and the best business, in my opinion. And I've been very fortunate. I have a business coach, Richard James, who coaches lawyers. And I've learned a lot from him over the last, 3 years of being in that program, and it's Your Practice Mastered, and they do a nice job of helping us, you know, structure what I was already doing. And for a long time, I was with Fine Law, and they had me doing videos back in the, you know, 2005, 2006, and it worked pretty well back then. Nobody was doing videos back then. I enjoyed it. You can Google what happened with Fine Law and some of the websites in the 2013, 2014, 2015 area. There are podcasts out there. Unfortunately, I had a site that stopped working and I started going backwards and I was having to lay people off. And I needed to do something else, because if I was going to get 75-80% of my business off of my website, because I'm in such a transient area, you know, I needed a website that was working. And so I was able to find Post Folly in early 2016, and the rest is sort of history. But you've got to know what you're spending and if you're getting anything back. And I spent probably the first 10 to 15 years of my practice just throwing money at a wall, having no idea what the return was. And that's one of the biggest changes between where I was 7 or 8 years ago and where I am now, is I know whether something's working or not. And I know I can cut it if it's not working, and I can put more money in something that is working. And you don't have to spend crazy amounts of money on a CRM. If you have Clio, I use Clio. Clio Grow does a nice job. It's not the greatest. Lawmatics has one as well. All of these people now have CRM, client relationship manager processes in them. They're already there. They're not perfect, but they're better than nothing, and they're included in what you're already paying. So if now Clio Grow is a little extra, and it does a nice job. And we use Clio Grow for a while. We use a company called Four Eyes now. But Clio Grow did fine, and it's there. And I think people don't even realize what is there, and they don't do a good job of capturing the leads and sort of figuring out how much money the different advertising is costing me and whether I'm getting any return on it or not. And if you don't know whether you're getting a return or not, you can get upside down real quick and your advertising budget can get completely out of whack from where it should be. And then you're not profitable.
Your podcast is going to be really good, Jonathan. and I say that because you've just painted, like for me, the clearest picture of somebody who started out wanting to be a business person, open up your law firm, and then quickly figured out that the things that you were doing by yourself weren't going to work, and that you needed help. So like you do all the things that we talk about that law schools don't teach attorneys, right? Get a business coach. Hire a marketing agency that you trust. Hire really good employees, train them well, pay them well, and make sure that they're taking care of your customers. I do like the idea, right? And I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh, I got to get the owner here and like the company to sponsor our local little leagues, because like my wife and I are trying to have kids. All my friends are having young kids. Like I want to go to a little league game and watch these kids like mess around. But I didn't think of the fact that, yeah, who's at Little League games is like, you know, people who are potentially getting divorced. Maybe that's because I don't yet want to get divorced. Thank you to my wife, Katie. So I hope it stays that way even when I make it to the Little League fields for my own children. But Jim, I want to ask you, because there are clearly out there a lot of less experienced law firm owners than my new friend Jonathan, who are trying to or hoping to have the at least a similar career that Jonathan has had. Where can they start? What kind of systems can they put in place? What kind of mindset should they adopt to get on the right path? Because it's not about, like you've said, it's about longevity. There's no quick fix. There's no we're not going to turn you into $1 million law firm overnight. But where can they start?
Yeah, this has been one of the most painful things for us as an agency over our history, is that everybody tends to look at a marketing company as the solution for everything. And it is the solution for very few things, actually. It's the solution to getting a phone to ring or to, you know, ideally grow top line revenue, but it doesn't manage your employees. Marketing doesn't manage your employees. It doesn't have anything to do with your operational efficiency or effectiveness. And I think that those are things that firms will repeatedly and consistently try to solve everything by just having more leads come in. And I think that that's a thing that we are seeing a slow evolution away from that thinking, where more people are coming to us with a better table setting of operational standards than they did in the past. For a long time, we used to just not work with folks that were just like, oh yeah, I have no interest in ever setting up a CRM, or I have no interest in doing this type of thing. And granted, if this was 10 years ago, like maybe that was okay, because nobody really had them. It's like, yeah, I have a Google sheet or a spreadsheet I keep my clients in and things like that. So it's that mistake of, it is a business, and any other business, you wouldn't just start marketing right away. You would, what systems am I going to run on? How am I going to, whether you think scale is growing to 3 attorneys or growing to 50 attorneys, like you can't, at some point it breaks after one person can't do all the work. And the more a firm thinks about that at the beginning and they start to plan for that, so they don't have to bang their head against the wall when the pain points come, just because they come predictably. And our business has done the same thing. Like, the pain points come predictably with certain growth measurements, certain things that we do. So that it sounds really simple, but the operational piece is so critical to success. I mean, and Jonathan and I have experienced this together, of just, there's, we're not doing a whole lot differently now from the standpoint of like investment or really even tactics, but he's made really big strides as far as how he runs his firm over the last 5 years that have allowed him to become a much more profitable firm. And it's not like he was yelling at me to do better. He was just saying, well, he recognized the problem as being rooted in operations. And we certainly had things that we could have done better too. But like sometimes your marketing partners can be that. I think that's a little bit more rare. And like, I'm glad we get to do that with some of our clients, but operations, like operations is usually your marketing problem, unless your marketing folks are really inept. But if they're driving calls, it's probably an operations thing.
So before we hop off, I want to ask you, Jonathan, I have my friend Jared Correa calls it table stakes. If you could go back to talk to your former self the first day that you opened your law firm, what would you say are the table stakes? What do you need in order to have sustained success as a law firm owner?
I think you need to have a lot of patience. You need to not quit when things don't go exactly like you think they're going to go. And I often say to myself, you know, now that I've been in business for 23 years and, you know, we have all the problems everybody else has. We have turnover. We had an attorney quit last week with no notice. I mean, that's just where we are, right? Attorneys are, you know, this is what they do. Do I think that's right? No, but that's how it goes sometimes. But I mean, you have to just sort of stick with it. But I think a lot of people don't know what they want, where they're going, what that's going to look like, you know, because not everybody would want to build, you know, a law firm like mine and have some of the headaches and problems that go with that. So you need to have an idea of where you want to go, what you want to do, you know, the kind of law you want to practice. I mean, I came out thinking I was going to do criminal defense, but I'm in the suburbs. There are not a lot of criminals in the suburbs, but there's an awful lot of young families getting divorced. And that's what was showing up and I wanted to eat. And so I started doing divorces. I was like, well, I kind of like doing divorces. You know, I can sort of deal with the emotions and the drama and all of that stuff. And I can help kids and that's a good way to go. And it was, you know, the other problem is it's cash and carry, right? You know, if you get into PI, it might be 2 years where you get paid. You get into bankruptcy, a chapter 13, it could be 2-3 years before the trustee pays you if the person's making their payments and they're still in there. You know, so, you know, you have to be thinking about, you know, especially if you're new in business, how am I going to get paid today? And so the things that are the easiest to do on the cash and carry, family law, criminal law, real estate closings. Those are the three easiest, get paid today, do work tomorrow, move it from your trust account to your operating account. And so that's some of the stuff people have to think about. And I think a lot of young business owners do. Fortunately for me, I was thinking about that. I was very fortunate to have a father who was a CPA in a small town representing small businesses. And, you know, he was invaluable to me as far as, you know, the mistakes he had watched other small businesses make, the mistakes he had made himself as a small business owner. So I had the ideal of, I've got to figure out how to get paid today and, you know, and work tomorrow. And that's why I ended up not getting into sort of bankruptcy and injury and some of the things where Social Security disability, where the pay is more. So you have to be thinking about how am I going to get paid? You got to be thinking about what your overhead is. And you know, as far as once you do that, the next thing would be, you gotta fix your phones, right? Everything starts with the phones. Your phones need to be answered correctly. I'm on the Answering Legal podcast. If you don't have somebody answering your phones, hire Answering Legal to get them to answer your phones. 85-89% of people are not going to leave a voicemail. They're calling the next person on the Google search list. So your phones need to be answered. My phones are answered 24/7, 365 by a live person who is taking information and telling that person we're going to get it back in touch with them. That's crucial. You've got to have your phones fixed. You got to answer the phones correctly. You got to build a relationship. You got to follow up with them. You need to call them back. You know, all of these things. And you think that's easy, but it's not. When you start to get busy and you don't have enough staff, and you might not have enough staff because you're not charging the right fee. And so, Nick, I could go on for 2 hours about things lawyers could do, but I would say, you know what you want to do, figure out how you're going to get paid, be aware of what your profit and loss is. If you're a small business owner, every dollar in overhead is a dollar you have to earn before you get paid. And everybody else gets paid before you do. And you need to really be aware of that as you start to grow your business. And the first thing operationally you got to do is you got to make sure your phones are answered and answered correctly all the time.
Jonathan, if they tomorrow outlaw divorce in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the surrounding areas, there is a job waiting for you here selling this service. It's just been a pleasure talking to you. That's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Jim Christie and Jonathan Breeden for joining me on the show. And thank you to all of our listeners. I know there's been a short hiatus. I was very tired from all the podcasting that I did a couple months ago. We hope you enjoy this conversation, and we will be back with another episode of Everything Except the Law soon. Be sure to check out previous episodes of our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Answer in Legal YouTube channel. Links to everything covered in today's conversation can be found in the description of this episode, including the link to Postali and to Mr. Breeden's law firm. We hope to see you next time, everyone.